Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America, decade by decade. Right now, I'm digging into the history of incredible infrastructure projects of the 1930s, including the Hoover Dam, the Empire State Building, the Golden Gate Bridge, and more. The promise is in the title. History That Doesn't Suck. Available on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I just called it WGR Day here on WGR. That's because you just heard from Paul, and now you're going to hear from Brian Koziel and the Wester Hotline. U.S. Open over the weekend, Father's Day. It was great kind of settling back and watching the last, you know, six, seven holes after the rain delay, and then all of a sudden, J.J. Spaun with that incredible, 64-foot putt, Brian? That was unbelievable, wasn't it?
It really was. I mean, good morning, by the way. It was awesome that he's able to have that moment. I mean, there's not a lot of, like, hey, you hit a putt to win. Now, officially, I know he didn't need that putt to win, but it obviously is the winning putt. So it's pretty wild. I mean, he's a guy that has struggled throughout his career to kind of keep it going, and he's had his best year ever. He lost in a playoff to Rory McIlroy at the Players Championship. That's kind of where he really, you know, I guess got known this year. And then obviously on the stage this time, I mean, overcoming, to me, I think a great lesson for all of us in any sport that you play. Like, he had a terrible start. He had a ton of bad breaks. Shoots a 40 on the front nine, which, for the most part, like, that would do you in. And he talked about how the rain delay kind of, you know, gave him a reset. He even changed clothes. He mentioned, what would Tiger do here? Well, he would grind it out. He wouldn't just throw it in and say, well, it's not my day kind of thing. And, boy, what a recovery. He played outstanding. He was definitely the best player after the rain delay and after the restart. And a pretty thrilling finish. That is an epic career highlight moment right there in the rain. Yeah. The long putt, the caddy jumps in the air with the umbrella. He throws his putter up in the air. The crowd's going bananas on the final hole at a historic venue in a major. Like, that's, you know, for him, that's the highlight of his career right there.
Brian, I mean, his highest career finish in a major was 23rd overall at the 2022 Masters. What do we know about J.J. Spaun, and how did this happen?
So this year he's gotten, I would say, up until this point where maybe it's not as surprising as, I know, you look statistically at what his career had been and you say this is a major shock. But he had a really good season. As I said, he finished second at the Players Championship. That's a really, really tough event. That's as tough as any non-major if there is. And he had been playing well this year. He's had some top 10 finishes. He had gotten his world ranking up to 25 in the world. So if you said, hey, you know, the U.S. Open winners ranked 25th in the world, that wouldn't sound that surprising. And that's kind of what he's done this year. He's just been very consistent. He's an excellent putter. He said that he has really changed his mentality. He thought maybe golf was, you know, he thought a few years ago, he's like, well, maybe this is what my golf career was meant to be. I've had a good career. He had one career win. Like, okay, you know, maybe this is kind of it for me. And then he had taken a new approach about, like, handling pressure better and handling these scenarios better and not really kind of having these huge swings in emotion. I think you saw that on display, Sal, during the round. Anytime you see Spaun, he seems very kind of even-keeled. And, you know, look, I'm going to keep doing the best I can, and if it works out in the end, then great. And obviously that mentality, I thought, was really, really impressive. I mean, the U.S. Open can stress out a golfer more than any other tournament itself. I mean, and Oakmont is probably the hardest test of all of them to begin with. So you're already going into a stressful situation with a ton of pressure, and I thought he just handled it beautifully. I mean, a lot of us could probably say, oh, he hit had a couple of bad breaks, a couple of bad bounces. Then he hits the pin on a great shot, and it spins all the way off the green and all the way down the hill. And you're thinking, like, man, how much worse of luck could you get? And he didn't pack it in. He came back with a nice reset and played outstanding on the back nine. To shoot a 40 and then a 32, I mean, you have to be, I think, pretty strong-willed to do that. I think that's a great lesson for all of us. Like, not only if you're just playing in your casual round with your buddies, like if you get off to a bad start, like, hey, there's a lot of golf to go, you can still make it a great day in terms of your score. Or if you're just playing any sport, you get down, you get behind, like, what a great lesson from us to see from Spawn that, hey, if you stick with it and you keep a great attitude throughout, like, good things can happen.
When you look at the leaderboard on Saturday and into Sunday, it almost, if you look at the names, now I know you are very dialed into golf, but to the average golf viewer, it kind of felt like a random tournament, you know, in June. That it's not a major with the names. And that's no disrespect, right? Spawn, McIntyre, Hovland, Cam Young, Hatton, Ortiz. You didn't see Scheffler or Rahm until later. You didn't see Rory McIlroy. Is that good for golf or not good for golf?
I think for the most part, it's good for golf, I'll argue, because now you're getting another set of names, Sal, that the next time you watch golf this week, you'll know Spawn, and you'll know his story, and you'll know McIntyre, and you'll know his story, and you'll know Sam Burns, and you'll know his story. And this is how we get to know the next set of stars. Now, I'm not going to say superstars. That would be what you said with Scheffler and with Rahm and with McIlroy. They have raised their game over time to get to superstar status in the sport. But I think you have this next tier of players that all are obviously outstanding players in their own right. They wouldn't be on the professional tour if they weren't. But you start to learn about Spawn, you start to learn about Sam Burns, you start to learn about Robert McIntyre, and you find qualities that maybe you find likable about them. Robert McIntyre earned a ton of fans by not even hitting a golf shot. Obviously, he played well, but he's sitting there in the clubhouse, and the TV coverage pans to him showing his reaction to Spawn's putt and how he clapped and kind of said, like, wow, like, you know, what a way there kind of to win. And it was at his expense. I mean, if that putt doesn't go in at the speed that it's at, maybe it goes 5 or 6 feet by. If Spawn doesn't get that comebacker, McIntyre's in a playoff, and maybe he's the U.S. Open champion we're talking about here on a Tuesday. So, I, you know, for him to react with such class and mostly in awe of the great putt that Spawn hit, even though it was at his expense in terms of losing because of it, I thought McIntyre really likable. And McIntyre, of course, won the Canadian Open last year, the Scottish Open. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of starting to make a name for himself. Hovland is still a top 10 player. I thought maybe this is going to be his time. Mm-hmm. Clearly, he's talented enough to do so. Adam Scott, if you're older like you and I, we all know about Adam Scott winning the Masters. And, you know, he's kind of at the tail end of his career. He would have been the second oldest to ever win a U.S. Open. Hale Irwin in 1990 would have been, is the oldest at age 46. Adam Scott at age 44, that would have been a really, really maybe nice bookend to what is a pretty outstanding career in its own right. But, yeah, there were a lot of different storylines there. Scheffler himself, world number one, Sal, definitely had the opportunities. I mean, God, every hole you'd go to that they would go to him, he's sitting here like, oh, he's got a makeable birdie putt chance here, and it would just, he couldn't make one. And that plus four number for a while that looked in play had Rahm in it too and had some other maybe bigger names. That the back nine, it was so crazy. There were so many times where I thought, this guy's still in it. This guy's still got a chance. Holy cow, Scheffler still could be the guy that comes out on top here. And we haven't even talked about the guy that had the lead for the most of the day, and that was Sam Burns. He obviously putted as good as anybody through 3.5 rounds. The hot putter went away down the stretch. I thought he got a bad break on not getting relief when he had that ball stuck in the water. He took a double bogey, and then him and Adam Scott are battling through the rain. There's the rain element through this whole thing, too. Like, so many different branches to how it played out. But, you know, memorable tournament for sure with how many different outcomes were possible at the end.
Brian Colzio on the Western Hotline. All right, Brian, the postmortem on Oakmont, was it as bad, as tough? I mean, it was certainly challenging. I mean, you could look at the scores, but just kind of all the talk that went into it, did it live up to, oh my God, this was just ridiculous?
I thought it was probably the right balance of them wanting to, the USGA would love the winning score to be even. Well, it essentially was. He was minus one, you know. I mean, so they got what they wanted. I thought it was very tough. I really did. The rough, if you hit it in the rough, you lost strokes because of it, unless you hit an incredible shot, which ultimately, again, if you hit an incredible recovery shot, then you should be rewarded for that. Here's what I did like, Sal. There was fluctuation in the leaderboard, and there were birdie opportunities to get yourself back in it. Sometimes at a U.S. Open, we get it where there aren't holes or there aren't chances to, like, come back. It's always about people falling back. I thought this had the appropriate mix of it being extremely challenging, super fast greens, super long rough, all that sort of stuff involved that the U.S. Open is all about, that people love to see. They love to see the carnage. They want to see the pros really, really struggle. They don't want to see maybe the winner being minus 22. I get that. I think it had all that. But at the same time, look at how Spahn finishes. He finishes birdie, birdie. The 17th hole was a drivable hole. He drove it. He hit one of the best drives of his life right there. So there were opportunities to score. And I think that's why everybody loves the Masters so much, because on the back nine on Sunday, those holes that are set up on the back nine are set up for there to be eagle opportunities, but also risk-reward. You could end up in the water and take a double bogey. And I thought, you know, for the U.S. Open, that always doesn't play out that way. And at Oakmont, I was like, oof, are we just going to see guys just falling and it's going to be survival of the fittest? There was some of that, but there were also guys that came up, like McIntyre and like Spahn. Just because they were at plus four and plus five didn't mean they couldn't get themselves back to plus one or ultimately minus one. So I thought it was the appropriate mix for what people like to see in a U.S. Open, for what the USGA likes to set it up. I have very little complaints with how that tournament played out in terms of the course. And
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, seriously researched, hard-hitting history podcast told through entertaining stories. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, how the setup went.
Next up, Shinnecock Hills next year for the U.S. Open. Long Island.
That's right. Yeah, out in Southampton, way out on the edge of Long Island. It's been hosting tournaments forever. And the last time it was there for a major, it was there for a PGA championship. Brooks Koepka won. The last time it was there for a U.S. Open, Retief Goosen beat Phil Mickelson. That was in 2004. That was a place where I was actually there in 2004. They were spraying greens in between groups with a hose because the greens had gotten out of hand. It was super hot. And way out on Long Island, like there's always wind because you've got the ocean basically right on top of the course. And if it's windy and the greens are fast, you could have balls just blowing off of it. So I'm sure the USGA learned their lesson from that we won't get that again. But, yeah, that's where it'll be next time, another one of those really, really, hard courses that have had a long tradition of hosting majors.
And then the next major this year will be at Royal Portrush in Northern Ireland, the British Open, the Open Championship. What do we know about this course?
So it was in the rotation for the Open, years and years, decades ago. And then it kind of went away. They did a restoration of the course, and now it's kind of back in. They want to get Ireland involved. Scotland hosts Open Championship. England hosts it, but they didn't have anything in Ireland regularly. So they renovated Royal Portrush. It was there, I believe, 2019, and that was Shane Lowry's win, where he won a major. Coming back to Ireland, to me, an interesting storyline is going to be how does McIlroy handle this? Because he, post-Masters, to me, Sal, has not handled it well. He's had arguments with blaming media. He's upset that his name got out in public about the driver specs, that it didn't conform, even though Scotty Scheffler's name was too. I think he's annoyed at the media that McIlroy's name was in the stories about the driver not conforming and Scheffler's wasn't, even though they both essentially had their drivers pulled. I don't know why he should be. I can understand maybe why he's taking aim at the media, but the media doesn't do the specs. The USGA officials that do the set. So somebody from the USGA leaked that to the media. He's saying, oh, the media leaked my name. Well, they're not the writer from golf.com is not checking up and weighing your driver and checking up the grooves on your driver to see whether or not they conform to the rules or not. And by the way, I just want to make clear, like, his driver not conforming style doesn't mean he cheated at the Masters or had an illegal driver. All it means is that maybe over time, the grooves have worn off to the point where the face doesn't conform. Or if you have a club that you've hit it so many times, like maybe it's worn off enough to the point where it doesn't meet a certain specification or a certain weight or, you know, something like that. It doesn't mean that he was cheating or that it was illegal. It just, hey, at some point over time, because these pros hit, you know, 500 golf balls a day sometimes, it doesn't, you know, meet the specs. It just wears out because it's a piece of equipment. So it doesn't mean, but I think people associated that with cheating. I think Rory didn't like that. He clearly hasn't played well post-Masters. It's so weird. I had it all wrong. Like, I thought after the Masters, I'm like, you just accomplished. He said, I've accomplished everything I've wanted to in golf. He's won all the majors. He's been a Ryder Cup hero. He's won the Grand Slam. I thought he would play freely, free swinging. Hey, if I miss a cut, no big deal. How could I be in a bad mood? I've accomplished everything I want to in the sport. Like, when you say something like that, you think, like, you know, nothing can put you in a bad mood, when instead it's been the other way. He's been very aggravated with the media. He's pissy with fans. He, to me, doing things that he shouldn't do, smashing tee signs, throwing clubs, he knows the influence he has in the game. He was the voice of the PGA Tour through the whole Live versus PGA Tour thing that has been going on for years. He's got global presence, and he's got global influence on kids, and people obviously would call him their golf hero. For him to do some of the stuff that he's been either saying or doing, of like, well, I didn't even care if I made the cut. Like, something's not right with him. He quoted saying, like, you know, oh, more people die going down Mount Everest than going up. Well, going up, you have that goal. You're reaching for it. You're fighting through adversity. Going down, it's like you did it already. How do you handle going down? Well, he hasn't been handling it going down at all. I think he needs a break. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see him play until the Open Championship. But it's in Ireland, in his home country. They should be celebrating his outstanding accomplishment. I hope he comes in with a better frame of mind, because he has done a lot of good for the game. He has been the voice of the PGA Tour for a long time. I know you want to take a step back from that. And I do think overall, like, he has made golf better in so many ways. I think he's had a bad couple of weeks. I'm willing to maybe say, like, hey, you know, handling his success, maybe not everybody would handle it perfectly, and I don't think he has. And I'm hoping that maybe a little break and a little refocus and coming back in kind of a different mindset, we'll see maybe the Rory McIlroy that is so likable here that we've seen for the majority of his career.
Hey, I only got like a minute left here with you, but I wanted to ask you, speaking of rules, about the Sam Burns situation, the water. What did you think about the ruling?
I thought he should have gotten relief. Just based upon what has happened at normal PGA Tour events, I've seen less water give a player a drop. Ultimately, he got an opinion. He asked for a second opinion. They stuck together with not giving him relief. I thought he should have. I know there's video on social media that Kyle Porter, who works for CBS, he showed him like stepping in the area where Sam Burns hit and showed a ton of water coming up. Even Burns with his club, every time he took the practice swing, there was a ton of water up. To me, because Burns is in the lead there, like, I don't know. I would have given him relief. It just seemed as though, like, we've seen it. I know people have said, like, well, officially, if your stance isn't essentially causing water to come up, then it doesn't deem to be in need of relief or in worthy of relief. There was just so much water there. The ball was in a lower spot than his feet was. I thought he should have gotten it. Especially Burns being in the lead. Like, do you want that to be the reason maybe that Burns doesn't win? Burns double bogeys that hole and didn't handle the rest of the holes well. As much as I was complimenting Spahn earlier for handling the whole day and coming back, Burns did not recover well from that. You wonder if they give him relief, Sal, and he hits the next shot onto the green and pars, are we talking about Sam Burns maybe going on to win? I would be curious to see how it could have played out differently. Now, maybe he still plays poorly down the stretch, and, you know, we're having the same result. But I'm sure for Sam Burns, he's definitely probably sitting there thinking, man, if I would have gotten relief there and hit it, you know, gotten a different result on that approach shot and I don't double bogey that hole, He's probably sitting there thinking, maybe I'm the U.S. Open champion today.
I know we're a few weeks away, but Porter Cup's coming up, and then Duster Challenge, right? You want to get the word out about that.
For sure, yep. Porter Cup up at Niagara Falls Country Club is the third week in July, and it is a great amateur tournament. So it's free, open to the public. I know you and I will talk maybe, you know, in another week or two about more of the details about what the field's going to look like.
Yep.
Some of the best amateurs. But that's up at Niagara Falls Country Club in Lewiston. We'll be doing some Tee to Greens up there to preview that on Saturdays. And then our Tee to Green charity Duster Putting Challenge is Friday night, July 18th at Glen Oak. It's open to the public. It's a $49 donation, and all proceeds go to PGA Hope to help veterans get golf experience, help with their mental health, put them back in kind of golfing experiences so they can kind of be with other veterans that have had trouble adjusting back to normal life. So Peter Gourmet is providing the food that night. We're so thankful for that. So $49 donation, you get into the putting tournament, you get the free dinner from Peter Gourmet, you get drinks courtesy of our friends at Michelob Ultra, all these sort of great things. Easiest way to sign up, go to the top of our Twitter page at T2, T2GBuffalo. It's the pinned tweet. It's on the link right there. You can click on it. We'd love to have as many putters out as possible. We had over 100 putters last year come out. Super fun night. Anybody can do it. You don't even have to be a quote-unquote golfer to do it. Just come fun. Putt on the 18-hole putting course that we have. Have dinner, have drinks. We turn on the lights. We play music. It's a ton of fun. I know you and Max have done it. So hopefully everybody can do it again. Friday night, July 18th, our Duster Putter Challenge that Tee to Green runs.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot for doing this today. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll catch up soon. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Sal. Talk soon.
All right, you got it. We'll take a timeout here. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the hour and then get to the 11 o'clock hour with questions for the, and answers, I should say, from you on Alex Tuck and JJ Paterka.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Sometimes historic events suck, but what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history podcast created by me, Professor Greg Jackson. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.